Bloomington schools have been deficit spending for years in the hope that state funding will eventually catch up and allow stability. That has mostly been a fruitless hope. Another annual exercise District 87 goes through are annual layoff notices, some of which stick, some of which don't. GLT correspondent Brianna Groh talks with Superintendent Barry Riley about this year's 17 job cut announcements.
When you think about part-time employees in particular, and we had a number of those folks who are on the reduction in force list, if you do not place those folks on a RIF list, you basically have to guarantee them the same amount of time that you had, at least the same amount of time next year that you have this year. And given that that's an unknown, first of all, that we may have that need, and second, that we've been in deficit for the past several years in our education fund, which is the fund that funds our classroom teachers, it makes perfect financial sense to put those individuals on the RIF list. If we were in better times and we did not have ongoing structural deficits, we might do something different. In other words, we might be willing to risk having a sense of being overstaffed if things didn't pan out the way we had thought. But we're not in that position right now. And even though I was pleased to see a small number of people that were on that reduction in force list, it's still very personal to those folks involved because there's some very good teachers that are on that list. And the risk we have is that they're not, in all cases, going to wait around for a phone call from us to see whether or not they're going to return. If they need full-time status or they need at least a part-time job for certain, they may not be waiting around for us to make that call. And that's the hard part for us because we'll lose some good people.
And just to be clear, so reduction in force doesn't mean that these people have lost their jobs. Is it sort of like putting them on a waiting list or just on temporary hold?
No, it does mean that they have lost their jobs. However, it's not unusual for us to call them and say, hey, we now are in a position where we will have this position. And since you did a good job for us, we want you back. And that's not unusual. We do have that happen almost every year since I've been here. And it will not surprise me that we'll be able to do that again in some of these cases. I'm not anticipating that we'll be able to do it in all necessarily, but certainly in some, I expect that we'll be able to do that.
Is this a larger reduction in force this year? What does that trend look like, if there is a trend?
No, it's not. We've been very fortunate, even though we're facing these ongoing deficits, to be able to not reduce our staff. Over time, there will become a point in time where we will not be able to continue doing that. One of two things is going to have to happen. We are either going to have to go through some drastic reductions to close our budget gap, or we're going to have to find additional revenues. And right now, the revenues are not very strong. They're not growing. So I don't know what that will look like in the near future, but that's something that we're going to have to keep our eyes on and pay attention to.
The district still hasn't passed its calendar for the 2019-2020 year. You're waiting on some state legislation to be decided on. What could change with the proposed legislation?
Yeah, there's a couple of bills out there that address the length of time that students have to be in attendance. Things changed from the prior year such that we used to have 173 days of actual student attendance, and now you have to have 176. So we had to build a calendar that reflected 176 days of actual student attendance instead of 173. What you saw tonight presented were, to get to those three extra days, were three teacher institute days that have partial student attendance on those days that are in the calendar in, I think, November, March, and February. And right now, there are bills that are floating out there that are addressing how long students have to be in attendance, and we're just not sure where that's going to land. So the calendar as it stands is fine for us to continue to move forward. Those logistics of how long a student may have to attend on those particular days, not a big deal right now. Obviously, we'd have to communicate that somewhere down the road to our parents. But what's important is we really want to get a calendar out to the community. Unit 5's already done that. There are folks out there that are waiting. planning trips, whatever the case may be, whether that's in August, December, around spring break. And we want to make sure they have those dates ready to roll. So I anticipate after presenting it tonight, we'll bring it back to our April board meeting and ask for the board to approve that in April. Fundamentally, I don't expect any changes whatsoever, but if there were, substantially, there will not be much of any. So I think families can look at that calendar as it's proposed and be very confident that that's what they should expect for the 1920 school year.
That's Dr. Barry Riley, Superintendent of District 87. I'm Brianna Groh. One of the things that is included in the calendar is the district's emergency days. This past couple of months, the district had piloted alternative learning days. Is that something that could be affected by this legislation for actual requirements for when students are face-to-face with teachers? And how will you work around that?
Yes, it can and will have an impact. In fact, that's part of the bill or both bills that I've referenced have specific references to what they call e-learning days in the bill, and that we call it alternative learning days. They're one and the same as far as the law will be concerned. Yes, that will have an impact. Right now, what we've done is we've taken, if you recall, we did a survey of our parents, our students, our staff. We have a lot of great information come back to us. Both positive things and challenges that families faced, challenges that our teachers faced, positives that our teachers saw, same thing with kids. I'm putting a group together consisting of teachers that represent the various levels across the district, as well as some principals, to take all of that information and begin to work on what will a high-quality alternative learning day look like for District 87 as we move into the future. That group, it will take some time to do that because that legislation has yet to unfold. It's not that they can't meet. They will, and we'll get that group going here shortly. But they're going to have to keep in mind that the law could change and affect what they're going to do. But we think it's important to get all those minds together to come up with the best practices, because we had a lot of neat things that happened on those days. Not that it wasn't without challenges, because it was. But we think that we can do those very well and really do a good job when we have those bad weather days, which for us, really, this year was more of an anomaly. For us to have two, we had three. It was a lot. We can go 5 years and not have any. But we want to plan for those, so in the future, should the need arise, we can utilize those instead of putting kids at risk.
So the district is committed to kind of working out the kinks with the alternative learning days. I just want to compare a little bit with Unit 5. They decided that they're not going to pursue, they call it e-learning as well, at this time. One of the reasons that decision was made was considerations for low-income families, how that impacts families who don't have that day of, in some cases, two meals with breakfast and lunch. How was that factored into your look at whether this would be a feasible program?
Yeah, that's a valid concern, and I'm not faulting my colleagues. I have a lot of respect for Mark and what they do over in Unit 5. In our case, we do a lot with our low-income students at all levels in terms of providing food and backpacks. What I would foresee in most cases, now granted there could be some cases where there could be an isolated incident. For example, we had a gas leak at Stevenson Elementary not long ago. That was at 6:30, 7 o'clock at night. And in those cases, obviously the kids are gone. You can't put food in a backpack and go home with the kid that night in order to have it available for the next day. However, oftentimes when we talk about the polar vortex like we experienced recently, there are opportunities to get things to students that day before you anticipate that weather. And if it actually happens, then obviously they're prepared. In addition to that, like I said, many kids have access to food through our programs that we already have, and they're going home with those things quite often. So I would expect that if we have part of what this group will do is address exactly what you're asking. You know, what will we do in situations where we've got students who, you know, cannot have access, they don't have access to food? Because here's the reality. You know, whether if they're out of school that day, it's no different than whether or not they're doing, you know, whether they're doing work and have access, don't have access to food. Either way, they don't have access to food. So if I close school because of the weather, I don't really see that doing learning activities has an impact on whether or not they actually have the food in their kitchen, if that makes sense. And I think part of what Unit 5's decision was, you know, they'll come back and they know that they're going to have food on those emergency days that are now at the end of the year. And, you know, we have summer feeding programs in different neighborhoods. So I'm not concerned that our kids are going to be hungry. They have access to food at those times of year. So I really don't see that as something that can inhibit what we would want to do with alternative learning days. However, it does need to be part of the plan. In other words, if it's a Thursday and they're not scheduled to get a backpack full of food until Friday and they're out, well, if we know the bad weather's coming, then we need to plan for that and get them something in that backpack ahead of that. I think in most cases that won't be an issue. It's not to say that you couldn't have a situation where it does happen.
That's Dr. Barry Riley, Superintendent of District 87. I'm Brianna Groh. Another concern that was talked about in Unit 5 was for kids who have special needs. They have something called an individualized education plan. What would be the plan there to help those kids who might need a little more, ideally face-to-face instructor time?
That's a great question. And again, that's one that is going to be discussed with that group. So I don't really have the, you know, the magic answer today, but I think it probably will consist of making sure that the kids' needs are met through the IEP. And in many cases, that can be done in a variety of ways, even if the teacher's not physically present there. There are some where that's just not, you just can't. So I can't sit here and say 100% of those things will be addressed on that particular day. But I do know that as we form that group, special education will be represented and be a definitely be a big part of that, because it's a, you know, they're a significant part of our population as they are in any district. So that will be a challenge, but I'm confident that we can address that in a way that addresses this most students' IEP. I can't tell you that we'll be able to do it in all cases, but most I think we will. And then what we'll have to do in those more isolated cases is work with parents and come up with a plan to make sure that we do address those needs. If that means that we have to provide services on an emergency day for that student because we couldn't do it on that alternative day, then that could be an option as well.
The district will also be handling registration next month for elementary schools. Enrollment in D87 has been going down over the past couple years. What projections do you have currently on whether that's going to be a continuing trend, or are we going to start to see a turnaround?
It's hard to tell. You know, it's hard in our case to look at birth rates in the community because they don't always tie to how our enrollment ends up. And we've tried to do that over the years. This is very difficult to do. We tend to remain fairly stable. We might lose a few here and there, but I am concerned about that in the sense that I think this year, as I look at some of the enrollments in classes at a few places in our elementary schools, we're actually sitting very good. And you could make an argument that we're overstaffed in a couple of cases. Now, that's good for the learning environment in those classes, but when you're, again, facing a structural deficit, that's not the best way to be able to do things. So those are situations that we'll watch very closely and may end up not filling a position here and there through attrition. You know, we have some retirements or someone has moved because their spouse got a job in Texas or somewhere. And we'll hold off on filling to see how the enrollments shake out. The thing that I really don't like about that is then if you need to fill a position, you're doing it late. You're doing it in August, and that's not the best way to go about getting the very best candidates. Unfortunately, that's the dilemma you have when you're, again, facing deficits. You really have to be aware of that. So Dr. Hanna, who really is the one who does our enrollment projections, and I work closely together, and we've had a lot of discussions in the last couple of months just about that, you know, we really have to hold the line and monitor these closely so that we are not overstaffed. It could mean we could see, in some cases, some larger class sizes than folks might like, and that's always difficult. But given the deficit, that's something we got to pay attention to.
Sure. And with those class sizes, especially when you're facing larger class sizes, that gets people thinking about the teacher shortage that we're in, especially across Illinois. There are reports that is actually getting worse. So I wanted to ask how the district is thinking about how it deals with that, especially when you do face budgetary concerns.
Yes, and my colleagues share that concern, not just here, but across the state and to a degree across the country. You know, the good news is here in Bloomington, Normal, Illinois, we have access to one of the largest producers of teachers in the state and across the country. In Illinois State University, we have another great small private university in Illinois Wesleyan who produces some teachers. We have Heartland Community College that feeds some of the people who end up getting their teaching degrees through either ISU or Wesleyan. So we're fortunate that we have that here in our backyard. And we
District 87 School Superintendent Barry Riley speaking with GLT correspondent Brianna Groh.